Hey everybody, welcome. It's time for Atomic Radio Hour, the post-nuclear podcast. This is episode 345. It's a whole hell of a lot of episodes. How are you? You look fantastic as always. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're reading. I've been on a real reading kick lately, and honestly, it's the thing that and journaling are the two things I look forward to the most right before I go to bed. I hope you guys are well. I hope you guys are doing a-okay. So, I'd like to get into this episode by talking about something that we don't often talk about on this show. Video games. Alright, we talk about video games all the time, but I'm hit with a little bit of a quandary, a little bit of a dilemma, a little bit of a problem, a little bit of a pickle. There's a bunch of stuff that I actually want to play. This year, I have really, we're 4 months in, and the only things that I've really played is Arkham Knight. And I'm still playing the Hitman games because they're girthy. And I was sitting down and I saw on Twitter the other day, which again, I'm not really sure how I feel about Twitter. I don't really want to be on it, but I am ingratiated. And I think I'm at a point where I'm too old to go to any other social media site. I kind of feel like wherever I am right now is kind of where I'm done. Unless like a nice big video website comes up, a video hosting site like a YouTube pops up, I doubt. And Twitch, I don't consider that because Twitch is Amazon owned and Twitch doesn't make money, neither does YouTube. But I don't know, I feel like YouTube's a little too vital. Anyway, I'm not going anywhere, so I'm still on Twitter, kind of. And I saw on Twitter that there's a bunch of games out or coming out that I really would like to play. And I'm at this weird impasse where I don't know what to do because I haven't had to worry about games that I wanted to play since I was pretty much in high school. So here's my dilemma, and I'd like some feedback. However you feel about this, please leave a comment below because I honestly or genuinely want to know how you feel about this. Atomic Heart, which is a game that's been out for a while, and I don't watch trailers. I do my best not to. I might see something here or there, but I prefer if I like the idea, I like the elevator pitch of it, then I'll go from there and see how I feel about something. Atomic Heart, a Soviet Atom Punky dystopia type game, about $40, really want to play. I can get it new right now for about $40. I could have it shipped, whatever. I also really want to play Atomfall, another game that's a post-apocalyptic dystopian inspired. It's the British one, and it's the 60s, and they're waiting for the government to respond, and the government never responds. It's, you know, the government. It doesn't really work. And there's also South of Midnight, which I really want to try for various reasons. One, I feel like I've never seen the American South, the Deep South, portrayed in a positive light. I've never seen a Deep South black character, let alone a female character. And if you know me, you know I'm a slut for a female protag. I love women. Happy March 8th, everybody. I love women. Ah, happy birthday, women. I love them all. My mama's a woman. I love women. Also, it looks like a fun hack and slash. The monsters look fun. I'm a big monster fella. I like stuff like that. I just want to be able to enjoy that and for what it is. I saw some pre-release footage that were like, oh, it's missing this and missing that. And I didn't comment, but I wanted to be like, hey, most games nowadays just don't have that until the game is released. And then they put out a day one patch. And lastly, this one's not out yet, is Doom the Dark Ages. I really, really want to play that. I didn't play Doom Eternal. I don't know if I will. Maybe I'll go back at some point and play it, but I really want to play the Dark Ages. Because there's a grappling hook and a fun shield and like a flesh melty McGee thing, whatever. And you get to be a giant like mecha that fights demon flesh kaiju. I'm into that. I'm into giant monsters and not as much into giant robots as you think I would be, but big monster, big lizard makes my lizard brain just tingle in all the best ways. And actually, now that I think about it, Stalker 2's out. I should really play Stalker 1 first, but I really want to play Stalker 2. And I want to play these games. I want to, and I want your opinion in the comments below. Please let me know, because I don't know where to start. Without Stalker 2, I think it's like $210 in games, and I just don't have $210. So this is going to be like, these are my next games for the rest of the year. When Kyle and I sit down to do our end of the year video, don't be surprised if these you hear these games again. But seriously, I'd really like to know if you're playing any of these or what you think of any of these, except for Doom, of course, because it's not out yet. But I need to move forward and play something new soon. And I just like a recommendation, if you have any. Let me know what you're thinking. Some of that stuff, I know at least South of Midnight is an Xbox exclusive. I thought Atomfall was, but apparently it's on PlayStation. Who knows? I'd love to hear from you, though. How do I transition out of this? Hold on. Okay, this way. All right. Thank you. Hey, what's going on? What's happening? It's time for this week's Patreon. I thought I was going to say, Lord, we got to do the Patreon real quick. Real quick. Names on screen. I love these folks. These are the folks that help support the show. This is the Ghoulman Entertainment Patreon that they help support. I just noticed now I don't have my watch on. Where did it go? These names are people who like the show and want to see it get bigger and better. And next week, sorry to do this now, but next week there is not going to be a live recording. There should be a, what I like to call around these parts, a burner episode. Because of it, I had to buy some things. I'll have to buy some things. And that stuff will be used in the making of the burner. And I really hope you guys like it because it's something that I've wanted to do for a long time. And it's a podcast style thing. Whatever. We'll get to that later. We'll get to that next week. Because of these names, I was able to go out and get all the equipment and, you know, do certain things that I couldn't have done otherwise without you. So I have to thank some people real quick. Starting at the top, I would like to thank the OG Noah. Thank you to Noah. After Noah, I have to thank Willie DeWitt. Thank you to Willie DeWitt. After Willie DeWitt, I have to thank Mellow Millhouse. Thank you to Mellow Millhouse. After Mellow Millhouse, I have to thank Captain Lennox. Thank you to Captain Lennox. After Captain Lennox, I have to thank Danish Hound Dog. Thank you to Danish Hound Dog. And last, but certainly not least, after Danish Hound Dog, I have to thank Brotherhood Outcast. Thank you to Brotherhood Outcast. Because of these fine folks currently on screen, the show can continue to grow and I can try to experiment. Mind you, this is a one-person show, so I might not get to experiment as much as I would like, but experimentation has been going on, will be going on, will continue to go on because of viewers like you. Thank you. So this week's lore is on a classic, truly a classic if there ever was one, something near and dear to my heart, something that I think about probably far too much. I think about it almost daily. I think about it enough. I think about it not enough. It is a topic. There is like lately I've been talking a lot about Batman to my friends outside of just the show, but it's usually Fallout. It's usually Godzilla, it's usually Batman, maybe another third thing. Batman might get swapped out because, you know, that's how interests work, for me at least. Anyway, today's piece of lore is a tried and true classic and a place I'm proud to call my home. So I did what I usually do. I went to the Patreon and I asked them a poll question and I gave them two classics from the Fallout universe. So if you'd like to hear any lore, and I mean any lore whatsoever from the Fallout universe, check out the Ghoulman Entertainment Patreon, because from the $1 tier to the $10 tier, every single week your voice is heard when it comes time to choose this week's lore. And by way of the Ghoulman Entertainment Patreon, I bring to you the lore on Megaton from Fallout 3.
Welcome to Megaton. The bomb is perfectly safe. We promise.
Megaton, a town that I am proud to this day to call my home. Maybe even more of a home than I would consider Vault 101. And mind you, these are the games where it all starts for me. Megaton is a town that has started on basically convenience. The bomb at the center of the settlement for which the town is named after. There's a cradle there that was used for convenience and later for commerce. It was a hub where people would rest and trade their goods, and because of the winds, because of the dust, the crater gave them a bit of refuge. I get all of my lore off of fallout.fandom.com, the Nukipedia, if you will. I love these games, I've played these games, but I use it as a reference, especially when I want to read quotes directly. And if you ask Manya Vargas, who, fun fact, Manya Vargas might be a reference to Vargas in the game Wasteland, reference back to the roots, she'll say, well, originally it started as a hole in the ground. My poppy talked about how his father and the original settlers just hid in that crater. It was enough to keep them safe from the dust storms. when things cooled down and people started wandering back into the wastes, some stayed behind. The Wanderers started coming back here to trade their stuff. By the time my Poppy was born, the town was a full-on trading center. Poppy got rich on the caravan routes and eventually convinced others to build the walls to hold off the raiders. And the Lone Wanderer can also ask, so it was just a collection of traders in the beginning? Manya Vargas can reply with, not at first. It was a collection of people trying to get into the vault, people worshipping the bomb, and a few other refugees. Then the traders came. Now, the caravans take care of most of the trading, but before they were set up, it was all Megaton. I worked on the caravans with my father for a while. That's how I met my worthless bag of liver spots I call a husband. Nice. So Megaton is a city that is there for solely just the reason of convenience and protection. It's almost Shady Sands-like in the way where it's like we developed and we grew out of nothing to protect our people. But at the same time, Shady Sands grows to be the largest government outside, the largest government outside of the Enclave, really, post-war. Throughout time, you'll see settlements start to grow and start to build. And what I think is so interesting about Megaton, and I'll get to it a little bit later, there's no central government inside of Megaton. Megaton is a city that is governed by folks. It's a city that is burgeoning with people, that more and more people keep showing up and wanting to take place there. And even the common houses, which I'll get into later, have started offering bunk beds to people because they know that Megaton is a safe haven. It's a place of refuge. But there's no one who really runs it. There's two people. There's Lucas Sims, who we used to make jokes all the time on the channel about him and his hat. And there is Colin Moriarty, two people that are integral to the town, but not one or the other is technically in charge. By 2241, the wall that surrounds the entirety of Megaton was starting to be built out of these giant flying machines from a not too far off airport. I've seen back in the day that Megaton was taken out of the remnants of what was left of Ronald Reagan International Airport. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's supposed to be roughly in McLean, Virginia. And the only other place I can think where they would have found refuge that would be planes in DC would have been Rivet City. But Rivet City is too far away, and you'd have to trek all that through the subway, and that's never going to happen, I promise you. So it's not directly said, but if you ask Manya Vargas about it... Now, a lot of this dialogue is referenced to her because she is the oldest living member of Megaton, and because her father and her grandfather were settlers there, pretty much since its inception, she has almost become like the town's record keeper, their herald. And if you ask her, what is this place made out of? She'll say, long ago before the war, there used to be machines. They were like buses, but they flew through the sky, taking people anywhere they wanted to go. You didn't have to walk. You just went to the air station, bought a ticket, and took it up to the skies. Anywhere in the world, you just up and flew there. When the war happened, the machines started dropping from the sky. Everyone around here thinks that the bomb made the crater, but it didn't. The crater provided good cover for the dust storms. And like I've stated previously, and I'll continue to state throughout all of this, them building a wall and building infrastructure and having trade routes and everything else, the bomb in the middle of town remained. No one moved it. And there was conversations about it, which I'll get to in a minute, but like, it's just there in the middle of the town. And because it was there, and because the Church of Adam was slowly developing, more and more people started to worship the bomb. The Lone Wanderer will ask Manya Vargas, so why didn't they move the bomb? And she'll reply, some of us wanted to, but the Church of Adam was always... Manya Vargas will say, some of us wanted to, but the Church of Adam was just getting its start then. We needed their help to build the walls and clear the wreckage. If we had tried to move the bomb, they would have refused to help. Besides, a lot of people just wanted to leave it alone. It doesn't seem to be hurting anything, and who knows what would happen if we messed with it. We do know. Depending on which way you take the main quest line when you get to Megaton, you can either activate it or you can deactivate it, and then they can worship it even more, or you can have a swanky penthouse in the middle of nowhere with a bunch of rich snobs as your neighbors. Now, while this is going on, all the rebuilding and the growing of the Church of Adam, some raiders attack what would become Megaton in 2241, and kill Colin Moriarty's father. And Colin Moriarty inherits his saloon, Moriarty's saloon, at the age of 14. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about Moriarty and Lucas Sims in a little bit. But one of the biggest things with them is, you know, you give a kid all that power and all that money at a young age, and it's going to go to his head. Moriarty's a scumbag. I can say that from the bottom of my heart. Colin Moriarty, the saloon owner fella. And again, in the year 2241, Vault 101 sends out its first above vault, above ground search party to see what's out there. And mind you, the experiment with Vault 101 was supposed to be that the vault was going to stay shut forever. You were born here, you'll die here. Vault 101 hosted a party to go explore the surface. And this was headed by one Ann Palmer, and they made contact in Megaton. I actually have their entire report that I want to read in its entirety for you. 2241-2-10. As our test suggested, the immediate vicinity of the vault is no longer dangerously irradiated, although the background radiation is still well above safe levels. Pockets of more intense radiation appear to still be common, and all surface water seems to be undrinkable. We will need to carry ample supplies of Rad-X with us on future surveys, but hazard suits do not seem to be necessary for general exploration. Our old maps are largely useless. The town of Springvale is an abandoned ruin, and all pre-war roads have disappeared or are no longer passable. We encountered a group of monstrous ants which appear to confirm McKay's theories on mutation due to extended exposure to radiation. We drove off the ants with gunfire and collected several specimens to study upon return to the vault. See Exhibit A, which is a picture of one of the ants. The good news is that human civilization still survives despite everything. We discovered a settlement known as Megaton. See Exhibit B, which is a photo of the front gates. Those inhabitants, although somewhat wary at first, soon welcome us into their town. We spend a good deal of time in Megaton and learned a great deal about the capital wasteland, as the area around Washington, D.C. is now called, from them. Megaton is a fortified outpost of, quote, civilization, unquote, of sorts. But it seems that the giant ants are the least of the dangers of this new world. We agreed that it was prudent to return to the vault immediately to revise our survey plans in light of what we had learned. Lewis and Agnes remain in Megaton to serve as ambassadors and continue to collect information until we return. Ann Palmer, survey team leader, February 10th of the year 2241. Let's jump forward to 2277, what was the beginning of a town where civilization was finally starting to come back. Now there is no more space. And I brought this up recently. There's common houses and just settlers that lounge about in bunks that just need somewhere to go, that just need to be safe. And they may pay a little bit of money here and there. It's never really specified. I think it's kind of wild that Megaton has people living in row homes, essentially, just these communal houses of multiple people, but they just had an empty house that was there that they could have at least, like, you know, turned into a duplex or something. And just, you know, that's the house you get. 100 caps in the house, but whatever, I get it. Plot device. It's become a safe haven of community, of commerce, of protection. You know, they have Deputy Weld outside who is protecting Megaton, but they also have Stockholm, who's a fellow who's in a bird's nest who with a sniper rifle who just takes out any of the invading raiders or the ants or what have you that will try to attack Megaton. There's a fellow who sits there and watches over the town. There's Lucas Sims and Jericho, who are the not quite mayor, not quite not mayor. And this is what I would like to talk about briefly, is you get Lucas Sims, who's not quite the mayor, but is the mayor. And you get Colin Moriarty, who isn't the mayor, but is the mayor. Lucas Sims will watch over the people because he genuinely cares about them, because he genuinely cares about people in general, because he wants people to be happy and to be free and to be healthy and to be able to live. And Colin Moriarty wants all of that because he can make a dollar off of them. He doesn't care whether they live or die as long as someone with a fat pocket can replace them, essentially, and make sure that he can thrive. He's not someone who really cares about other people. He has Gob, the ghoul, who's the bartender of his saloon, and he charges him room and board. And he's a slave, Gob is, but he's not.
Sounds like slavery to me.
Sounds like slavery to me, but they throw you a couple pennies at the end of the day. And if you ask me, it's Lucas Sims, because he's honorable. But what's wild about them is that, you know, people will follow a guy with money, and that's why they like Colin Moriarty. And what's wild about Colin is even though his morals are so twisted and set in that way, he still has respect for Lucas Sims. Like, if you walk into the bar, if you walk into his saloon wearing Lucas Sims's outfit, he'll yell at you. He'll be like, how dare you think you have the right to wear that man's clothing? Like, there's a respect there. And I think Lucas Sims can see that Colin Moriarty is respected because he's a successful businessman. And I think Colin Moriarty can see that Lucas Sims is respected because he gives a damn. Also, he has a big gun, but that's besides the point. This is the year 2277, where the Lone Wanderer will leave the vault, find out that he's been there when he was a baby, find out that Colin knows his dad, finds out, you know, all these other things about the world. But this is a world that is so... Megaton feels so realized in my mind. And every time I go back, I'm like, huh, you know, maybe they could have done this, maybe they could have done that. But it's, you know, hindsight. That's one of those, his game is 20 years old at this point. I look at Megaton as like a crowning jewel of the Fallout universe. It's up there for me. It really, truly is. Now, this I would like to read quickly. I want to read this directly, what I have quoted here, because this is something that I'm not quite sure is canon or isn't canon. From everything I understand, this is from the Survivor Guide, the Survival Guide, the Prima, the Strategy Guide. They're not canon, but they're not canon. I say all the time, I consider them to be somewhat canon because they're official pieces of media that correspond with the game. Lion's Brotherhood victory over the Enclave and recapture of Project Purity, Megaton prospered immensely. Following the death of Sheriff Lucas Sims, his son Harden took the role. Moira Brown published and distributed her Wasteland Survival Guide across the expanse of the American Wasteland by way of traveling caravans. By October 10th of 2297, Brown was working on a new book, a compilation of the best and most useful tales of the Lone Wanderer for the next generation. And like I said, it's not anything that's like, this is...
And so the Lone Wanderer cheated death outside of Project Purity, like he once did some other time before.
It's not that, but it's something that kind of just alludes to it. I know by 2299, it's believed, again, this is from the Prima Strategy Guide, by 2299, that the Lone Wanderer has left DC, has left the Capital Wasteland, is pursuing something else, has gotten older, has retired. He might be dead. But by 2299, there's no more possible stories. I wouldn't be surprised if we get an allusion to him in one of the episodes of the show coming up, but not to like season 3 or 4. Megaton doesn't have the biggest roster of people in any game, or any Fallout game for that matter, but I would just like to read off. Now picture this. This is a game that came out on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 in 2008. Andy Stahl, Billy Creel, Colin Moriarty, Confessor Cromwell, Deputy Weld, Doc Church, Gob, Harden Sims, Jenny Stahl, Leo Stahl, Lucas Sims, Lucy West, Maggie, Manya Vargas, Mickey, Moira Brown, Mother Maya, Mr. Burke, Nathan Vargas, Nova, Deputy Steele, Stockholm, Wadsworth, and Walter. Some of the things you can get here, please, if you take nothing else away, get the bobblehead out of Lucas Sims's house, please. It's one of the few places where if you're wearing your vault suit when you get there, you actually get a special line of dialogue, hello, how do you do, wearing a vault suit. Also, I don't know how I forgot to mention this. If you blow up Megaton, for whatever reason, on the map, it no longer says Megaton, it says Megaton Ruins, and then you can find ghoulified Moira Brown. There's an awesome first time getting to Megaton, the gates opening animation, that's just, it rips. Every time I restart a game, I make sure I sit there and watch it. Now, Mr. Burke, who I didn't really talk about much in this, because I want to talk about the history of Megaton and not what happens or happened to Megaton, but Mr. Burke is completely gone from the game in the Japanese release. So that release that I have on my shelf that is a Japanese Fallout 3 PS3 pressing doesn't have Mr. Burke in it whatsoever because of Hiroshima. And I totally get it. As someone who's been to Hiroshima, absolutely get it. They didn't need to put it in the game. That's Megaton. That is what I consider to be a place that is so close and near and dear to my heart. It's almost like a second home, man. True and real. I love Megaton. I've blown it up a couple times just to see what happens, but I really can normally not bring myself to do it. I love Megaton. And I love you. How cute. I hope you guys are having a good time. I hope you've enjoyed that, because that has been this week's lore.
Hey, what's up? What's going on, everybody? Hi, welcome to segment three. It's going to be a quick segment three. I'm going to tell you this right now. I want to start off by saying I was actually incorrect. The Switch games last week, the Switch games are not going to be $80. They're going to be $90. Physically, they're going to be $90. And after the tariffs, which I said I wasn't going to get political, but now we literally have to get political, the tariffs got introduced. It was either the day of, day before, or day after. I'm not sure of the Switch 2 announcement or showing off of, because we already knew about the Switch 2 coming out. It turns out that the tariffs on Japan, I believe it was a 26% tariff on imports from Japan. I saw a thing today. It was from Animaniacs. It was Wacko's World, where he goes over every country in the world. Out of all of the countries, I believe there was 7 that don't have tariffs on them right now. So the games are going to be a little more expensive. The Switch was $500. Switch 2 was $500. Now it's going to be about $650 to $720. If I do say so myself, I wouldn't be surprised if Nintendo just goes, give us a fat thousand. I genuinely would not be surprised. Give me what is like rent for most people. You know, on average, probably, if you have roommates or whatever. If you include your groceries, give me a month of your life that you worked for. I wouldn't be surprised if that's a thing. Other than that, though, I really have nothing to talk about. Damn, I really have nothing to, like, genuinely. Other than that, they put Sabrina Carpenter in Fortnite, and I'm very excited for it. I cannot wait. I'm playing late because I'm unemployed. Just seems like another one of those weeks where everything happened last week and nothing happened this week. But I know as soon as I get to work tomorrow, I'm going to find out that somebody important was assassinated. Or, you know, something blew up somewhere, or something big is going to get announced. It's just how it is. And you know what? I'm going to take advantage of that. I'm going to ski. I'm also going to daddle. Let me get out of here because I got a ton of shit I got to do today. If you've enjoyed the show, thank you for listening. The intro music is by the one and only Shane Ivers. It's called Feather Duster. Check it out if you get a chance. There's a bunch of music on his website, silvermansounds.com/free music, where you can get all of his free stuff for free, which is free. And also you can find my free song that I use as the free intro. It's called Free Feather Duster. Also, check out the Patreon. Shout out to the Patreon. Thank you to Willie to... Thank you to Willie DeWitt, who's been here tonight for the live studio audience. It's a pleasure, as always, to see your face in chat, sir. If you'd like to be part of the live studio audience, check out the Patreon in the description below. I also want to give a special shout-out to the Discord. Join the Discord. There should be a link in the description below for that as well. And also my Twitter, the show's Twitter, and Kyle's Twitter. I'm not really sure how we feel about Twitter. Kyle uses it to send me news. I don't even know if Kyle uses it anymore. Chicken Jockey. I saw the Minecraft movie. I could have talked about that. It's not good. It's not good. It's exactly what you think it is. It's Jack Black playing the same character that Jack Black has been playing for 13 years. Overrated. There were some things in there I liked. I love you guys. Thank you for being here. I'll see you next week with something a little different. An episode like I think I've ever done before, if everything works out properly. Really hope I'm not overhyping it for something that doesn't happen. I love you, and I'll be seeing you shortly. I'll be seeing you soon. Be safe, everybody. Tippy waitress. Love you.
Atomic Radio Hour Podcast.
A Ghoulman Entertainment Production.